for your morning. All the news you need to know. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Well, good morning. This is the WABC Early News. It's Hump Day. I'm Frank Morano.
Hump Day. Hi, Frankie. How are you?
I'm great.
Wonderful. Well, not so great is the weather from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center today. We have some lousy weather, unfortunately, on the way. We're going to have some clouds in the morning, and then it will ultimately turn into rain this afternoon. Slight chance of a rain shower, but we will start to see rain increasing as, or the probability of rain increasing as the day goes on. We're going to get to about a high of 79 degrees today. That same forecast we can essentially apply for tomorrow. We'll have some rain showers in the morning with scattered thunderstorms in the afternoon, a high of 79 degrees. The storms will continue through Thursday night and into Friday. They'll start to subside. The rough weather will start to subside, but we will have some rain in the morning on Friday. By Friday evening, we should have some clear skies and a low of 58. So we're going to be in the 70s, low 70s as we get into the weekend, mid 70s on the weekend. Saturday and Sunday look really nice. I'm really happy about that because we've got our big walk on Sunday. The weather for Sunday is looking to be about 74 degrees, mostly sunny skies. And let's see the humidity here. 55% humidity, so not too bad. That's pretty nice. Saturday's going to be pretty much the same thing, a little bit more humid on Saturday. But Sunday looks like the day of the weekend, the golden day of the weekend, which couldn't be better news for us walking in the Tunnel to Towers 5K.
Absolutely.
Walking, yeah. I reiterate, walking.
Well, you're in such good shape. Why aren't you going
to
run?
I can't run. I've never been able to run.
Is that because of your inability to sweat?
That's part of it, but aerobically, I just can't do it. I mean, I know people say, just do it, just run, and then do another mile, and do another mile, and it's never worked for me.
Yeah, well, you could also run and then walk, and I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to run, walk.
Really? Don't you have people going with you?
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out that, but also—
Aren't you going to walk with me? Why don't you walk with me?
Well, because I do have to be back in Staten Island for Rachel's baby shower, so or to entertain the husbands and fathers.
Oh, well, we're fast walkers.
Well, good. Okay. Well, so I'll trust me. My running is probably about what your walking is.
Okay.
That's that. All right. The FDA could make a decision today on Pfizer's COVID booster shots. An advisory panel already recommended a third dose for those at high risk, along with people 65 and older. It didn't think an extra shot was needed yet for everyone. The agency often follows the committee's advice. As for Moderna's booster, that remains under consideration. Johnson & Johnson says its one-shot vaccine is more effective with a second dose.
Okay, so Brazil's health minister tested positive for COVID yesterday, just hours after he was at the UN General Assembly. Marcelo Quiroga is his name. He is the second member of President Bolsonaro's delegation to the UN to test positive. The first was a member of the advance team that arrived before the president. Quiroga says that he will quarantine for 14 days here in New York City, but we do have video of him shaking hands with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson yesterday, the day he tested positive. He is wearing a mask. He said he was wearing a mask the entire day. However, Boris Johnson was not. President Joe Biden, Johnson met with him later on at the White House. And not clear if anybody in the U.S. delegation came in contact with Quiroga or will need to be tested. But when Quiroga was leaving the area, very similar to his boss, he flipped both of his middle fingers to protesters as he pulled away from the U.N. on Tuesday.
Speaking of COVID, two well-known characters from Family Guy are taking viewers on an adventure to explain how vaccines work. In a new video on the show's Twitter page, Stewie Griffin and his canine friend Brian are transported into Peter Griffin's body after Peter asks why he has to get a coronavirus vaccine. Stewie then explains how the COVID shot works as other characters, including Meg, are used to help explain how the vaccine works. Stewie says getting vaccinated means being able to do more things we love, and it protects those Peter is around. Peter ends up getting the shot and says, that was easy.
Okay. I do love that show. Let's head over to Traffic on the Sevens. We love Joe.
Good. I'm glad. Good. Thank you very much. All right. Well, Juliet, Frank, we've got a big problem. This is kind of a little north, but still on the New York State Thruway. All lanes are closed at exit 17. There's a tractor trailer fire up there. Now, they're diverting everybody off at Route 17, or rather exit 17. So as you head northbound, you've got that problem on the New York State Thruway. So if you're on a tractor trailer heading north, you better start thinking of another way to get north. If you're on the Transit Authority, delays on the N and the number 6 trains coming in from the island were in good shape. Same thing at the Hudson River crossings. Really no big deal there. And alternate side is suspended again. Still frozen zones, complete closures anytime, anywhere in Manhattan with the General Assembly still meeting. And like I said, alternate side is suspended. With Traffic on the Sevens, I'm Joe Nolan, Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Thank you, Joseph. Yep. An update now on the Gabby Petito story. Police are actively investigating possible sightings of Brian Laundrie. Actually, one sighting on a deer cam 500 miles away from his home in Florida. Apparently, a man who bears some resemblance to Brian Laundrie was spotted in the northwest portion of Florida. Sam Bass is the guy who took the photo of this man in the wilderness in Baker, Florida, on Monday. It was taken using a deer camera, according to Bass's Facebook account. The Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office said Tuesday that it searched the area. They didn't find anything of note. Laundrie, of course, is a person of interest in the disappearance of Gabby Petito. She disappeared after she and Laundrie set out on a cross-country trip. Northport police, meantime, this is where Gabby and Brian shared a home down in south, sort of the south portion of Florida. They have also resumed the search for Laundrie closer to home. Teams of investigators combed through the Carlton Reserve near his home, sending out vehicles, ATVs, canine, and drones, but so far nothing.
Well, I guess the longer this goes on, the worse it looks for Brian Laundrie as well, right? I mean, that theory that he is no longer living is certainly, I would think, growing in likelihood.
I don't know. I mean, the cops didn't have their eyes on him, so he was able to get away if he wanted to. I mean, obviously, so he could be halfway down through Mexico at this point, or he could have. Who knows? I mean, anything could have happened. I'm going with he's still alive and he's just on the run.
A New York town is showing support for Gabby Petito. She's the woman we've been talking about who went missing during a cross-country road trip. The couple lives in Florida with Brian Laundrie's parents, but they met on Long Island where Petito's parents still live. Neighbors there in the Blue Point section of Long Island lined the streets with hundreds of teal ribbons. Her family plans to issue a statement once her remains return home to Long Island.
Well, we do have confirmation now, although in reality we probably didn't need it. An autopsy found that the death of Gabby Petito was a homicide. The cause of death, however, is still pending. They're waiting for the final autopsy results. Her body was found in a remote section of a Wyoming national forest. The FBI says that they remain dedicated to ensuring that anybody responsible or complicit in her death is held accountable. Meantime, there's a woman who says that she told the FBI on September 16th that she saw a man that is, she says, is 100% certain Brian Laundrie. She says she saw him back on August 26th, 27th, and 28th near the Spread Creek campsite in Wyoming, and that is indeed where Gabby Petito's body was found on Sunday. Jessica Schultz is her name. She's 38 years old. She says that she noticed Laundrie was alone, and they were she and her friends were actually thinking about asking him to join their group, but they changed their mind. All of her friends confirmed seeing the van, and Schultz and her friends were thanked on Sunday by the FBI. They say that they had led them to that spot where Petito's remains were located.
The clock is ticking to avoid a government shutdown next week. The House passed a bill yesterday to extend funding through December 3rd and suspend the debt limit for a year after that. But Senate Republicans are expected to block the measure later this week because they don't want to vote on raising the debt limit. That means a shutdown could still happen if funding runs out after September 30th.
There is a very disturbing story coming out of Coney Island. A decomposed body was found there under the boardwalk with duct tape around its mouth and hands bound with a rope. Now, I didn't say his hands or her hands because the body was apparently so decomposed that the authorities couldn't immediately ascertain the corpse's age or gender. It was found by the NYPD on Monday night and discovered under the boardwalk by Surf Avenue and West 5th Street. Are you familiar with that area?
Very.
At all?
Yes. Worked there for 3 years, and Coney Island is one of my favorite places to visit. And that section of Surf Avenue right near the boardwalk is an area I'm very familiar with.
Does it surprise you that this body was able to decompose? Because apparently it was first found by homeless people in the area.
It does, actually. It's a pretty crowded area. I don't know where it was hidden or where it was found, but yes, that does surprise me.
Yeah, well, police responded to the scene just about midnight after receiving a 911 call about a dead body. NBC here in New York reporting the person was pronounced dead at the scene. Obviously, they have not been identified yet, or they at least weren't as of last night, and the cause of death is still pending. Pending an autopsy.
Today is the official start of fall in the Northern Hemisphere as temperatures start to cool and the leaves begin to change. It's the autumnal equinox, which ushers in the new season thanks to the orbit and tilt of the Earth that officially happens at 3:20 this afternoon.
That is wonderful. I'll be out there celebrating, doing some sort of little fall dance.
Even with the rain you predicted?
You know, I mean, I'll just run outside my house and run back in.
All right.
Take a towel. Police identified the man who they believe murdered his girlfriend in her home in Bronx this week before her body was discovered by her 14-year-old daughter. Angel DeJesus of Brooklyn, 44 years old. He is the one suspected in the death of 35-year-old Belkis Lopez, again, whose daughter found her inside a bedroom with a rubber band around her neck in her home on East 158th Street near Melrose Avenue in the Melrose section Monday morning. It's not clear whether the teen or someone else called 911, but EMS responded. They found Lopez dead at the scene. The boyfriend was at the home when the teen saw her mom alive around 1 a.m., but he left by the time she was found dead. Police released a photo Monday of DeJesus, who's shown shirtless with a large tattoo on his arm. They are still looking for him, but have identified him, but are looking for him.
Well, we'll get to sports with Matt Sapienza momentarily, but in sports-related news, the audience for ESPN's Monday Night Football with Peyton and Eli Manning more than doubled in NFL Week 2. Peyton and Eli drew 1.9 million viewers this week. That's up from 800,000 in Week 1. The brothers talked with Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre and Buccaneers tight end Rob Gronkowski this week. The Mannings will be back for Monday Night Football's Week 3 Eagles-Cowboys matchup on ESPN2 next week.
Okay, so pardon me for my ignorance here. So they were just commentating?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't miss their back.
A very clever ploy on the part of ESPN to get more people to watch.
Very, very smart. Also, this kid, his name's Archie, I think. The young Manning who is going to be one of the top prospects, I guess.
Yeah, I would assume, you know, their father was Archie, so it would make sense that one of them would have a son named Archie as well.
I think it's the third brother who wasn't a football player, you know, didn't achieve notoriety like the other two did. I think it's his son. And I actually saw them. I think I saw the brother, and I believe it was Eli at a bar that used to be in Hoboken. One day. And I think they were with the son, if I'm not mistaken. This was a long time ago, so the kid would have been a little kid. But anyway, you know, cool story. Let's get over to Matt Sapienza, who also has hopefully some cool stories about sports.
I hopefully do. Thanks, Juliet, and good morning, everybody. Giancarlo Stanton lined a laser beam of a home run. Aaron Judge added a three-run shot, and the Yankees powered past the Texas Rangers 7-1 to keep pace in the crowded AL wildcard chase. Joey Gallo also went deep against his former team, and a finally healthy Luis Severino closed out with two shutout innings in his first major league appearance since the 2019 AL Championship Series. New York, which remained a half game behind Toronto for the final American League playoff spot, has taken two straight from last place Texas following a 7-15 stretch. Jordan Montgomery struck out six in 5 2/3 innings of a one-run ball for the win. Xander Bogaerts hit a go-ahead two-run homer in the fifth inning in Queens and lifting the AL wildcard leading Boston Red Sox over the stumbling Mets 6-3, with the Red Sox wearing these jarring yellow and blue uniforms. Boston won. Oh, my God. They were disgusting looking. The Red Sox were wearing anything but red. Boston won its sixth straight game and remained 1.5 games ahead of Toronto for the top AL wild card with 10 games remaining. New York lost for the sixth time in 7 games and is 73-78, intensifying pressure on manager Luis Rojas and as Steve Cohen's first season as owner nears a disappointing end. With Sports at 15 and 45, I'm Matt Sapienza, and that's WABC Sports. Back to you guys.
Our sports guy, our control room guru, and a fashionista.
I'm a busy guy.
Multi-talented. Yes, you are. All right, coming up in your Jet Set Juliet travel update at 5:40, we are going to talk about welcoming travelers from the European Union and the UK, but we also have another announcement. The U.S. has extended another ban, so we'll talk about that. And also, I've got the safest cities in the world, the top 5 safest cities in the world, and I'll explain why they are considered the safest. Maybe you want to visit now that you know that. That's coming up at 5:40. We have On This Day. And, Frank, what's happening in your biz buzz?
Well, I'm going to tell you what the markets did yesterday and what you can expect in terms of August home sales. But first, why don't we get a look at traffic with Joe Nolan.
Those Red Sox uniforms were hideous.
Unbelievable.
Right?
Hideous. Absolutely hideous. If you're on the New York State Thruway, northbound, all lanes are closed. Exit 17, tractor-trailer fire in the process of being cleared up and out of the way, but they have all lanes shut down. So if you're traveling long-term, getting up the thruway, you're going to have that issue. Now, we also are going to have a little bit of a brake check already coming in through Queens Boulevard, inbound on the LIE, and also coming up through Lower Brooklyn, inbound on the Gowanus BQE. Transit Authority and the number 6 with delays, an alternate side again today is suspended. I'm Joe Nolan with traffic on the 7 Stock Radio, 77 WABC.
Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
5:20. This is the WABC Early News. It's 73 degrees. I'm Frank Morano. Here's what's happening in business. The opening bell rings this morning. After Wall Street closed out Tuesday in mixed territory as the market tried to claw its way back from Monday's steep losses, investors are cautious as the Federal Reserve wraps up its two-day meeting today, with central bank expected to taper its bond buying. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell said in July he expects the Fed to slow its $120 billion in monthly purchases sometime this year. The Fed will release its quarterly economic forecasts along with a statement on interest rates, and Powell will brief the media at 2:30 this afternoon. At yesterday's closing bell, the Dow Jones lost 50 points, the S&P 500 dropped 3 points, and the NASDAQ gained 32. Existing home sales for August are due this morning. Housing industry analysts are forecasting a slowdown, with sales of existing homes falling 1.3% last month to an annual rate of 5.87 million. The numbers will be out at 10 o'clock this morning. And finally, an Iowa agricultural company is the latest victim of a ransomware attack, putting the nation's grain, pork, and chicken supplies at risk. New Cooperative says it has taken its systems offline to contain the threat. A ransomware group called Black Matter reportedly encrypted the company's data and stole 1,000 gigabytes worth of files, including research and development documents and soil mapping technology. They're demanding nearly $6 million to decrypt the files. Juliet?
Thank you very much. More details coming out this morning from witnesses who were some of the last people to see murdered van life, so-called van life traveler Gabby Petito, and her boyfriend, for that matter. A guy named Chris was outside a Utah store last month on August 12th when he says that he saw this tussle between Petito and laundry. And he said that he heard her say, "Why do you have to be so mean?" He also said in his statement, this Chris guy told police that Petito appeared to be hitting laundry during a fight over a cell phone. He said something just seemed off between these two. He kind of offers a different perspective than the person who called the fight into 911. That person said that he saw laundry hitting Petito. Petito's remains, of course, were found on Sunday in Wyoming. She was ruled a victim of homicide by the autopsy that came about yesterday.
New York City Republican mayoral candidate Curtis Sliwa was in Fort Lee, New Jersey yesterday, hunting for his Democratic rival, who he is convinced lives in an upscale condo there. Sliwa, holding a sign that read, "Where is Adams hiding?" and carrying a milk carton with a picture of Eric Adams on it, asked neighbors walking out of the huge tower on Palisades Avenue if they had seen Adams coming in and out of the building. Sliwa says Adams has not been honest about where he lives. The Democrat, dogged by stories that he didn't live in the city, gave some reporters a tour of his Brooklyn home this summer. Sliwa claims that Adams failed to list the Bed-Stuy townhouse as his primary residence on federal tax filings. He says that's more proof that Adams is no longer a full-time New Yorker and actually lives with his girlfriend in New Jersey.
Donald Trump, you heard this at the top of the news by Deb, he filed a lawsuit Tuesday against his niece, Mary Trump, and the New York Times. This is stemming from many explosive news articles about the former president's taxes and his finances. He is apparently seeking no less than $100 million in damages. He accuses niece Mary of breaking non-disclosure agreements by leaking his personal tax documents to the New York Times. According to Trump's attorney, in this 27-page document, the defendants engaged in an insidious plot to obtain confidential and highly sensitive records, which they exploited for their own benefit. And Times reporters Suzanne Craig, David Barstow, and Russell Butner were in an extensive crusade to get Trump's tax records, as we know, as he says that they relentlessly sought out his niece, Mary, and convinced her to smuggle the records out of her attorney's office and turn them over to the Times. Again, this is according to what the lawsuit claims. These Times reporters, by the way, won a 2019 Pulitzer Prize for their coverage of the president's finances.
McDonald's is pledging to offer more sustainable Happy Meal toys by the end of 2025. The fast food giant has already cut down its use of fossil fuel-based plastic in its toys by 30% since 2018. If McDonald's can reach the target announced yesterday, the Illinois-based company will have cut out 90% of the less sustainable plastic it used in toys in 2018. More than 100 countries sell Happy Meals, and McDonald's distributes over 1 billion Happy Meal toys a year worldwide. The company's chief sustainability officer says the more eco-friendly toys will begin rolling out in the U.S. by January of next year.
UFC star Conor McGregor, he was seen once again flailing around, but this time he wasn't beating somebody up. He threw out the ceremonial first pitch at Wrigley Field on Tuesday, and apparently he was not anywhere close to the Cubs infielder Patrick Wisdom's waiting glove. His throw sailed high and into the safety netting behind home plate. Although it is probably not the worst ceremonial first pitch in baseball history. Which one sticks out to you? I mean, 50 Cent was pretty bad. That was at Citi Field in 2014.
Well, I think for radio people, the one that certainly gets the most attention is Gary Delabate from the Howard Stern Show's disastrous first pitch.
I don't remember that.
Oh, if you look at it on YouTube, it's probably about 10 years ago.
Have you ever seen the one of Carly Rae Jepsen?
No.
The Carly Rae Jepsen, for those who don't remember, the girl who sang So Call Me Maybe, that person. Mm-hmm. She threw out this horrible first pitch. It didn't even go airborne. It hit the ground.
Well, 50 Cent was pretty bad. Mariah Carey had one that was pretty bad in Japan, I think it was. And Dr. Fauci, God love the guy. Not an athlete at this level, at this stage of the game. It was very outside throw when he opened the 2020 season.
Yeah, he wanted to keep the ball socially distant.
He did.
That's a good
one. Did a good job.
527, let's get a look at traffic and transit on the sevens with Joe Nolan.
I remember that Carly Rae Jepsen one. That was absolutely hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
Check this out.
Anyway, here we go. We got ourselves a couple of things. First off, again, don't forget and keep this in mind all week and into next week that the UN General Assembly, again, going to be meeting frozen zones, complete closures, et cetera. So you want to avoid, again, the east side, pretty much east of 6th Avenue from the 30s into the 50s. Good news on the thruway northbound, just the right lane closed now coming up to exit 17, that tractor trailer fire being cleaned up. And now southbound, getting off the Garden State, make that the New Jersey Turnpike at 7A, that off-ramp, the outer roadway off-ramp. There is an accident, so if you're heading to Great Adventure early on this morning here, you got a problem. Transit Authority delays on the N and the number 6, and alternate side of the street parking rules and regulations again today are going to be suspended. And this report is a service of Indeed.com. Streamline your route to hired with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in the same place. Find your next great hire at visitindeed.com/credit. I'm Joe Nolan with traffic on 77 WABC.
Thank you, Joe. The safest places in the world, these are the safest cities on the planet. Are any of them in the top 10 in this country? I will give you the answer to that. But if you're thinking about maybe traveling, maybe moving, you want to go someplace that's considered safe and just really wholesome and healthy, these are the places you might think of. That's coming up in your Jet Set Juliet travel update after on this day, which is after Deb's headlines right now.
I'm Deborah Valentine. President Biden today will convene a virtual vaccine summit. It's to coincide with the UN General Assembly meeting here in the city. It's designed to push well-off nations to try and do more to get the COVID-19 pandemic under control. Meanwhile, former President Donald Trump Tuesday sued his estranged niece and the New York Times. It's over a 2018 story about his family's wealth and tax practices, all based on confidential documents the niece provided to the Times. A coroner has officially determined that Long Island's Gabby Petito died by homicide. Her remains discovered at a national park in Wyoming. A search continues for the 22-year-old's fiancé, Brian Laundrie, down in Florida. Well, the defense is winding down its case in the sex trafficking trial of R&B singer R. Kelly in Brooklyn federal court. One of his attorneys said yesterday, Kelly, though unlikely to take the witness stand prior to closing arguments. Well, one of two teens in the killing of Barnard College freshman Tessa Majors at Morningside Park in Manhattan pleaded guilty yesterday to both murder and robbery charges. 14-year-old Luciano Lewis is charged as an adult. He held Majors in a headlock, preventing her escape as another teen knifed the woman to death. And Frank and Juliet, if you purchased a Mega Millions ticket, oh my, check it. The winning ticket for Tuesday night's Mega Millions sold right here in Manhattan. It's worth $432 million. Sold on West 48th Street at Pronto Pizza. The cash option is worth $315 million. And the winning numbers 36, 41, 45, 51, 56. The Mega Bowl was 13. And that's your 77-second WABC News update. Juliet will have your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center right now. 72 degrees, cloudy skies. I'm Deborah Valentine.
Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Wait just a second. Deb, Pronto Pizza on West 48th, like right off of 6th?
Ma'am, Pronto Pizza.
Oh, my God. I used to go there all the time.
Oh,
that's right by
goodness.
Fox.
Is that where
God.
You bought your ticket?
I didn't buy my ticket there. I wish I brought my ticket there. Oh, my God. You got to be kidding me.
My God. What would you do with $315 million?
Oh, I would be out the door on a yacht right now. Oh, my God.
Me too.
That's it. That's insane. Well, it could be somebody from Fox or Radio City. It's all right there.
Could be somebody right here at 77 WABC.
Woo. That's true. My goodness gracious.
My.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic.
Well,
all right.
If it is somebody here at WABC, I would say that if it were me, I would be the first one to share it with everybody that works here.
If it were you?
That's right.
That's if it were you, but it's not because you didn't buy a ticket at Pronto Pizza.
That's right. That's right. But if it were me, that's what I would be doing.
Wowzers, I can't believe that. Well, on this day, back in 1529, Cardinal Thomas Wolsey was stripped of his office as Lord Chancellor of England. He was Henry VIII's right-hand man, but he was not loved by Henry VIII towards the end of his life because, of course, he would not help. Well, he couldn't succeed at helping Henry get divorced from Catherine of Aragon so he could marry his little mistress.
On this day in 1692, 8 people were hanged for witchcraft in Salem, Massachusetts. They were the last hangings of the Salem witch trials.
And on this day in 1735, Robert Walpole becomes the first quote-unquote British prime minister. He was actually the first Lord of the Treasury, but it was the first person, ultimately, who would live at 10 Downing Street to kind of run the country.
On this day in 1862, President Abraham Lincoln issued a preliminary Emancipation Proclamation declaring all slaves in rebel states free as of January 1st, 1863.
And on this day, 1761, it was the coronation of King George III of the United Kingdom and Queen Charlotte. And interestingly, unlike many of the other monarchs, he was very devoted to Charlotte throughout most of their life, or throughout all of his life, rather. They had 15 children. 13 of them reached adulthood, which was pretty significant during that time, actually. And he was the one who went crazy. He was also the one who was the king during our American Revolution.
On this day in 1915... the first African-American Catholic college, Xavier University, opened in New Orleans.
Well, that's all I have.
All right, well,
that's all I have.
I will just mention then that on this day in 1994, Friends premiered on NBC.
Oh, how wonderful. There should be a lot of premieres in September. We should be saying what premiered every day in September, because September's the fall. You know, that's usually the time that they have all the premieres.
It's true.
Oh, well, actually, hold on one thing. Charlie's Angels premiered on this day in 1976.
Oh,
yes.
Great.
Farrah Fawcett. Do you remember the originals?
Absolutely. Yes. She was the only one I was paying attention to, in all honesty.
Farrah?
Yes.
Not Kate Jackson or Jacqueline Smith?
No, I was a Farrah Fawcett person.
Oh, I was a Jacqueline Smith. I thought Jacqueline Smith was gorgeous. I kind of liked Kate Jackson, though. She was sort of like the tough one.
Mm-hmm.
She's pretty cool. That is on this day.
I like John Forsythe.
What was
it? John Forsythe.
John Forsythe?
Mm-hmm.
Was he the, what was he? He was a voice?
Yeah, he was.
He was Charlie?
Was Charles. Yeah.
I forgot. I mean, you know, it's like 50 years. I don't know. I remember this stuff.
Understood.
Bosley. Remember Bosley?
Yeah, David Doyle.
Yeah. Yes, as a matter of fact. I'm glad you knew his name. Could not remember it. Is he still alive?
No, he's been dead a while, actually.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Do we have some other things to get to? I mean, I know that you've got some good business news.
That's for sure. Coming up at 5:40, I will tell you about the incredible story of major companies who are committing to helping Afghan refugees start over in the United States. And the push to reinstate the federal eviction moratorium. I'll tell you about that and a whole bunch of other interesting business news.
Also interesting, more details are coming out from this Bob Woodward book, Peril. Apparently, the latest is that Lindsey Graham called President Trump over the summer and told him, you effed your presidency up. Before the former president hung up. This is according to this book, which seems to have a lot of really salacious things. Apparently, the reason that Graham felt that he effed it up was because of the false claims that he lost the election due to mass voter fraud, according to the new book.
The Emmys are being blasted for a lack of diversity after Sunday's awards show. A new government report shows the media employs fewer Latinos compared to other industries. So Texas Democratic Congressman Joaquin Castro says this is part of a larger problem with Latinos underrepresented in pop culture.
And by the way, the new Space Force uniforms have been unveiled. And I got to tell you, they bear a very, very, very uncanny resemblance to those worn in Battlestar Galactica. if you happen to look at them. General John Raymond, commander of Space Force, revealed the uniforms for the newest branch of the military on Tuesday, and all you have to do is look at a couple pictures side by side, and you will see that I am not lying. And on that note, let's head over to Traffic on the Sevens with Joe Nolan. Hello, Joseph.
Hello there, Juliet. And as we begin to travel on the eastbound side of the Jackie Robinson, Cypress Hills, an accident's being cleared southbound on the New Jersey Turnpike, getting off at 7A, that ramp on the outer roadway. There is a collision, the northbound New York State Thruway exit 17, tractor trailer fire. That will continue. The right lane going to be out. For a while there, all lanes were closed, but they've got the main part of the roadway reopened. Frozen zones, complete closures anytime, anywhere, again today in Manhattan with the General Assembly. And alternate side of the street, parking rules again today are suspended. I'm Joe Nolan with traffic on Talk Radio 77 WABC.
All right, let me tell you what's happening in business. Yesterday, a mixed day for the markets. The S&P dropped 3, the NASDAQ gained 32, and the Dow Jones was down 50 points. Major companies are committing to helping refugees from Afghanistan as they begin new lives in the United States. The Tent Coalition for Afghan Refugees now includes names like Amazon and Facebook. Pfizer is also on board with the effort, as its CEO said that many projects will work to support refugees. The pledges come as Afghans fled their war-torn nation after the Taliban swept into power last month. That happened as American troops were being withdrawn. Missouri Congresswoman Cori Bush is helping lead an effort to reinstate a federal eviction moratorium. Bush and other Democrats introduced a bill yesterday that would give the Department of Health and Human Services permanent authority to enact an eviction ban during public health crises. The group believes the ban would aid Americans struggling to cover rent because of pandemic-related job losses and reduce potential COVID exposure by keeping people in their homes. The U.S. Supreme Court put an end to the moratorium last month. Juliet?
Thank you very much, sir. It is time now for your Jet Set Juliet travel update. Just one day after announcing we're finally going to be welcoming travelers from the European Union and the UK back to America again, another announcement. The U.S. has once again extended the ban on non-essential travel across its land borders with Mexico and Canada. This is for at least another month, so at least through October 21st. This ban has been in place since March of 2020, obviously when we realized COVID had jumped the Atlantic and Pacific onto our shores and into our homes. So if you have friends and family waiting to come and visit you or you want to visit them, non-essential travelers can still head to Mexico and Canada by air. It is easy to fly to Mexico. There are no restrictions. Canada, another story. If you're fully vaccinated, you are welcome to visit, but you have to present a negative COVID test taken within 72 hours of arrival in Canada, or you have to show proof you've recovered within the last 180 days. U.S. officials also reiterated the news that broke Monday. Fully vaccinated visitors from the following countries will soon be allowed to visit. This includes the EU member countries, as well as the UK, Ireland, China, India, South Africa, Iran, and Brazil. We still don't know the exact date, but it is going to be sometime in November, probably early November. So you may be able to spend Thanksgiving at home with your pals from overseas. Moving on to the fun stuff, The Economist has revealed its list of the world's safest cities. Yesterday, I told you about safe cities Americans can visit with regard to COVID. They have low COVID rates. Today, we're kind of expanding it a bit. So The Economist's safest cities, it's broken down by five realms of safety that they think are most important. Number one, health safety. How does a city do with keeping its citizens physically healthy? How did it deal with threats like the pandemic? Number two, digital safety. Really important now that so many people are working from home. And of course, we're buying things. We're making financial transactions on our computers, our smartphones, our iPads. Number three, safety when it comes to infrastructure. Our travel patterns have been altered thanks to COVID. Are they solid? Are our utilities able to keep up with demand during changes? Number four, environmental security. Are we working to lower pollution? Are we trying to expand our green spaces? And number five, the obvious one, personal security. Does our city have control of crime? So here is the list of the top five safest cities from five to one. Number five, Tokyo, which was number one a few years ago. It's actually dropped down a tad. It did very well when it comes to fighting the pandemic, getting its people the vaccinations, and it did a good job keeping the lights on, the water running, and all that utility stuff during the crisis. Sydney, Australia comes in at number four. The city did very well keeping the online scammers in check. It does well, I guess I should say. In fact, it tops the list in digital security. So if you go there to visit, you know, you probably won't be hacked. I don't know. Number three, Singapore. The country is usually always in the top five. Its citizens are healthy. It does really well with online crime. It's very modern, so you've got really strong bones as far as infrastructure is concerned. Number two is Toronto. It's in our backyard, and it's easy to visit. It also tops it when it comes to focusing on green initiatives, targeting polluters, plus its roads and bridges are tip-top, so it does very well with infrastructure. And number one safest city all around in so many realms in the world is Copenhagen. The capital of Denmark has very little crime, but also it's a city where the line is blurred between the haves and the have-nots. People of all levels of wealth intermingle together at schools, at the supermarket, and that leads, according to locals, to a level of trust in society and an overall feeling of keeping each other safe. So they obviously did very well in safety, keeping crime low. It's number one. When I'm traveling, I'm definitely curious about crime. It's kind of the most important thing. Obviously, my husband and I tend to meet people and hang out late, and we're always closing the places down wherever we go. I mean, there are so many pictures, Frank, that I have and videos of us on our various vacations leaving, you know, late at night. We've closed the restaurant down with our friends who live in the city that we're visiting. And we'll be walking home, walking back to our Airbnb. We'll be taking pictures in the middle of empty piazzas or the dark cobblestone alleyways. So the personal security section is very important to me. Besides Copenhagen, wow, the Northern Europeans have a secret. Amsterdam, the Netherlands, Frankfurt, Germany, Stockholm, Sweden, and Brussels, Belgium were tops when it comes to personal safety, a lack of crime. So I must say I have to add Venice, Italy to that list. We walk around at 4 a.m. I am perfectly fine leaving John with my with all of our friends, and I'll walk back to our Airbnb. No fear whatsoever. So I just would like to say that I think that they should have been on the list. And let's see. I guess no American cities made it into the top 10, but this is where I have a little bit of a question about the whole study. New York City comes in at number 11.
Oh.
I don't know. I mean, it certainly should have lost a lot of points given the skyrocketing crime, you would think. But interestingly, we're tied with Barcelona for number 11. Ironically, where I had my camera stolen from right out in front of me by this pickpocket. It was brilliant. D.C. came in 14th, and San Francisco and London tied for 15th place. And that's your Just That Julia travel update.
Well, you can make your own list of ranking cities on whatever criteria you want. You know, you're not bound by these people.
I know. I'm just telling you, I'm just passing the word on. All right. You know, I've got some questions. I'd like to see who was on the panel doing all the deciding.
Yes. Frankly. Well, I want to see a Juliet curated list.
Oh, that's I'd be happy to. Maybe I'll do that tomorrow.
Yeah. 5:45, let's get a look at sports with Matt Sapienza.
Thanks, Frank, and here's what's going on in the wide world of sports. Giancarlo Stanton lined a laser beam of a home run. Aaron Judge added a three-run shot. And the Yankees powered past the Texas Rangers 7-1 to keep pace in the crowded AL wildcard chase. Joey Gallo also went deep against his former team, and a finally healthy Luis Severino closed with two shutout innings in his first major league appearance since the 2019 AL Championship Series. New York, which remained a half game behind Toronto for the final American League playoff spot, has taken two straight from last place Texas, I should say, following a 7-15 stretch. Jordan Montgomery struck out six in 5 2/3 innings of one-run ball for the win. Over into the Mets now. Xander Bogaerts hit a go-ahead two-run homer in the fifth inning and a two-run double in the sixth, lifting the AL wild card leading Boston Red Sox over the stumbling Mets 6-3, with the Red Sox wearing, again, these atrocious uniforms. Boston won its sixth straight game and remained 1.5 games ahead of Toronto for the top AL wild card with 10 games remaining. New York lost for the sixth time in seven games and is 73-78. Intensifying pressure on manager Luis Rojas as Stephen Cohen's first season as owner nears a disappointing end. With sports at 15 and 45, I'm Matt Zapienza. You make it a great day. I'll see you back here tomorrow.
All right, 5:47. Let's get a look at traffic and transit on the sevens with Joe Nolan. Are you making it a great day, Joe?
Yeah, so far I'm making it a great day. Man, I love that, man. It's awesome, you know, with all
Thank
that.
You.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, it's great. Have a great day. It gives everybody all fired up and ready to go. New York State Thruway, northbound exit 17, tractor trailer fire, right lane going to be out. Now, if you're on the Jersey Turnpike down at 7A, that off-ramp on the outer roadway, there's a crash. Eastbound Jackie Robinson, we're slow at Cypress Hills. Again, that accident continues. That is still there. Now, other than that, we do have some brake checks along the way on the Long Island Expressway. Same thing as your travel coming up through Lower Brooklyn inbound on the Gowanus BQE. Really, so far, so good as you come inbound at the Hudson River crossings, though, and alternate side of the street parking rules are suspended today. This is part of service to Discover. Discover matches all the cash back you're earning your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover is accepted 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more. Discover.com/yes. With traffic on the sevens, I'm Joe Nolan, Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Thank you very much, Joe. One of the beloved Sex and the City stars has passed away. We'll tell you who it is, and Sid will join us with a preview of Bernie and Sid.
Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Thank you very much, William. And I'm going to give you a Jet Set Juliet version of the weather. I'm going to make it real quick. Today, we're going to have overcast skies, a slight chance of rain coming up later on in the day, and cloudy skies this evening, few showers developing again late at night. Those will lead into scattered thunderstorms. Thursday, we're going to have a high of 79. We'll have rain in the morning, and then the storms will start in the afternoon. They will continue through Thursday night and into Friday morning. The storms will go away Friday morning, but it will become partly cloudy after some morning rain, a high of 72. So we're starting to get a little bit cooler. Saturday and Sunday looking good, mid-70s and mostly sunny skies. Currently, the temperature now from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center is 73 in New York City.
The city of Newark is extending its rental assistance program. Tenants and landlords now have until November 5th to apply for up to 12 months of past due rent and 3 months of future rent. The program aims to help individuals and families financially impacted by the pandemic. More information and an application can be found at NewarkCOVID19.com.
And some sad news. Willie Garson, who was famous for his role in Sex and the City, the series and the movies, has passed away, according to his friends. He apparently had been battling cancer, according to TMZ. They have not confirmed it, though, but they have been talking with sources who were connected to the Sex and the City star. Willie was a fan favorite from the HBO series. He played Sarah Jessica Parker's male BFF, Stanford Blatch, a gay socialite who Carrie Bradshaw often called Stanny. Willie Garson, dead at the age of, let's see, 57, just 57.
Yeah. They're not saying what he died of?
It's intimated that it is cancer, that he was battling cancer.
President Biden says the United States military and the military power in general must be a tool of last resort. He made the statement during his address to the UN General Assembly yesterday. In his speech, the president said the coronavirus and climate change are two issues that must be addressed without military confrontation. Climate change and Afghanistan were also some of the topics President Biden talked over with UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Here's a little bit of President Biden and his remarks to the UN yesterday.
Well, we meet the threat of challenging climate, the challenging climate we're all feeling, already ravaging every part of our world with extreme weather. Or will we suffer the merciless march of ever-worsening droughts and floods, more intense fires and hurricanes, longer heat waves, and rising seas?
So the UN General Assembly wraps up in its entirety on Monday.
And we have Sid Rosenberg joining us to tell us about what's happening on the Bernie and Sid.
Hey now, good Wednesday morning. How are you?
Sid.
Yeah.
Hollywood. You've just got so many names now because you're doing so many things.
I am doing a lot of things. That's right.
I
have two movies. I've got a television series. I've got a radio show. I'm writing a book.
You still have failed on getting me a thing with Real Housewives. Failed completely.
I haven't failed yet. That's not true.
Mm.
I'm still looking at it.
You're up for the challenge.
There are real possibilities that exist.
I mean, they need train wrecks. Move. I'm perfect.
I don't know how you have the time to do all these things.
I really don't.
I mean, look
who's talking.
Well, I know, but I find, it's tough enough for me to find the time to read a book, let alone write a book, that do television and everything else. I am very impressed.
You are really? Why?
Because I don't know, you're on a different schedule. Maybe it's because you stopped drinking and everything. Maybe
well,
I'm wasting all my
that
time.
That does help.
Drinking alcohol.
Yeah, and then you feel like crap the next day. So when you're drinking,
well, I still feel pretty good.
You do?
Yeah.
Did you drink last night?
I had a White Claw with dinner. That was
it. What is a White Claw? I see those
it's
all the time.
It's a spiked seltzer. It's a summertime.
Like bottles
it's
and
barely
James.
Alcohol.
Vodka
it's barely
seltzer.
Alcohol.
Yeah, yeah, like bottles and James, basically,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah, it's barely alcohol.
Yeah. Well, I am busy, but we got a busy show coming up today on Bernie and Sid. We've made the decision, much like Rich Lowry on Mondays and Bo Dietl on Tuesdays and Bill O'Reilly on Thursdays, Peter King is now a weekly guest on the Bernie and Sid show. He will join us at 7:40 this morning. So the great congressman will be here for his weekly visit. And then we'll do some politics and entertainment with the lovely and entertaining Lauren Conlon coming up at 9:20. So those are our two guests today. We got a boatload of stuff to discuss. And you never know on this show where we're going to go.
Peter King had put out a wonderful statement talking about his days playing stickball in response to the Larry McShane article in the Daily News on Sunday. Really, really wonderful case for why stickball is still such a great game.
I still love that game.
Me too. And they don't play it anymore. I hope you ask him about that. And speaking of sports, Lauren Conlon, very nice to come all the way out to Staten Island for the softball game that we had for the Solar
Foundation.
Oh, she
did come.
Yeah, she didn't play. She watched her kids as her husband played.
Oh.
And,
wow.
But it was very nice of her to come all the way out.
How about that?
Yes.
Did your team win?
Yes.
Of course.
Naturally.
It was a success when you look back.
Yeah, we raised some money for the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
That's awesome.
And we had a lot of fun.
So. All right, fantastic.
I totally forgot to ask you about that. I'm very sorry.
That's all right. That's
Why
okay.
didn't you remind me? That was wonderful that you did that.
Well, I mean, hopefully there'll be other softball games in the future, right?
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we will publicize them and promote them, and I may even show up.
That's the show. Yeah. For today, Peter King and Lauren Conlon and a whole bunch of stuff.
Thanks,
think Biden
Sydney.
Spoke yesterday. Thank you, sweetheart. Have a nice day.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.
All right. We do have a couple headlines to just get to again, just to refresh you. There are several updates in the Gabby Petito situation. Cops are actively investigating a possible sighting of Brian Laundrie on a deer cam up in northwest Florida. A man who bears resemblance to Brian Laundrie was spotted up there in Baker, Florida. The photo was taken using a deer camera, according to a man named Sam Bass. He was the one who got it. Okaloosa County Sheriff's officers say that they have searched that area and they didn't find anything of note. Meantime, the death of Gabby Petito was a homicide. This is not a surprise. The FBI confirming the news yesterday. The cause of death remains pending final autopsy results. Meantime, Frank, a woman says she told the FBI back on September 16th that she saw a man that she is 100% certain was Brian Laundrie. She says she saw him along with her friends. They saw him on August 26th, 27th, and 28th near the Spread Creek campsite where Gabby's body was found this past Sunday. Jessica Schultz is her name. She says that she and her friends noticed Laundrie, who was alone in the van. They were going to ask him to join their group, but then she changed her mind.
In a similar vein, Scott Peterson's effort to get a new trial continue in a hearing today in a California courtroom. Peterson was originally sentenced to death in 2004 for the 2002 murder of his pregnant wife, Lacey, and their unborn child. The death sentence was eventually overturned, but he remains serving life behind bars. Now, Peterson's lawyers say a juror that convicted him lied to the court when she said she wasn't a victim of domestic violence. That juror is set to testify and has requested immunity to protect against self-incrimination.